Hey guys, this is Cole Weicker.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
This is Jochen Graf.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I...
Ball's gonna bounce down, it's free in the box. Bicycle kick! Goal! Rowdies! What a play! What a shot! And it's 1-0 Rowdies!
Good evening, everyone. Thank you again for joining us tonight. We are the Unused Substitutes, your green and gold gospel, your only source for year-round Rowdies dedicated coverage. We are live on Radio St. Pete Online, part of the Beautiful Game Network, and presented in part by Roughneck Scarves. My name is Stephen Cundiff. Joining me tonight, I've only got one co-host tonight, Matthew Cox. Matthew,
when
sir.
You only got one, you might as well get the best one.
Hey, we're not going to start drama, but it's true. Okay, so.
Yeah, I said it.
It's a good night. Dan's out of town, which means that we're running the show, which everything's great.
Hey, everything worked at the beginning, so that's progress.
It hasn't broken yet. It's great. Everything's fine. We do have a guest tonight. John Morrissey will be joining us. He is, of course, USL Tactics on Twitter. So he will be joining us here in a few minutes to help us break down everything that's going on. Our Patreon executive producer tonight is David Morales. As always, David, thank you for doing everything you do, helping us with the funding of this little operation. We appreciate your support, and we also appreciate the fact that you have been a loyal supporter of us, even on Twitch, for the pregame shows. You've won a couple of things that we've given away this year so far, so thank you, as always, and of course, we'll revisit this again at the end of the show, but Patreon is the number one way to help us and support us if you want to take the listenership to the next level. If you want to give us your thoughts while we're on the air, maybe during the week, maybe you want to talk some smack if you're from Louisville and you've got nothing else to do because you're from Louisville, the Twitter account at UnusedSubsPod is the mothership. That is the place to go. We will respond to you in kind, I assure you. Matt, this past week, well, more specifically weekend, our Twitch pregame show was at a slightly different location. We happen to, we're doing it from midfield right now. It's fantastic. I happen to love it. We had Jake Nutting on as our special guest, which, of course, I was more than happy to walk away from the interview for that moment, just because obviously you guys go way a little bit further back than I do with him. And that was the start of a very beautiful evening in downtown St. Petersburg.
It was, and I'm not going to lie, we've been kind of checking the weather off and on during the week and during the day, and everything, looks good. The Rowdies tweet out, the rain's gone, everything's great. But I'm telling you, as soon as we sat in those chairs, I don't want to say hand-me-downs, but repurposed from the Rowdies Den barstool chairs, the skies got a little cloudy. And I kind of was like, we sure we're not going to get hit by lightning while we do this? Is this like a bad sign? I think that was the last time I felt any real measure of discomfort on the evening. From there on out, I'm not going to say smooth sailing because it was a 1-0 result, but it was about as relaxed a 1-0 game as you get.
You know, this is why we don't take weather opinions from amateurs. Because, you know, obviously I'm not. I'm fully not considered an amateur at all. Come on, guys. You guys were always silly. It is actually kind of funny because there was more than one person that was out the tailgate that was walking into the stadium early that was like coming up to me like, Steven, is this going to be like, what's going on? I'm like, guys, it's clouds. It's fine. There's literally nothing wrong. You guys were nuts. And as you said, it was the start of a very, you know, it was a relaxing game. I believe the final expected goal number from Birmingham on the night was what? 0.4, I believe.
Yeah, I saw. I saw Nicholas Murray tweet something about 0.3.
Yeah.
There was a Louisville fan who says, well, Birmingham, who is a good team, held them to one goal that we feel good about next weekend. And his response was, you also need to factor in that Birmingham, a good team, was held to 0.3 XG for the entire game. And it was like, oh, that's a good point.
Yes, Tampa Bay Rowdies 1-0 on a goal from Jan Ekra, who did a couple of passes up the field, essentially, with Connor Antley to kind of build up to that moment. Admittedly, Birmingham's defense, specifically the man that closed in on Ekra, kind of backed away at the last minute and kind of gave him the opportunity to go ahead and get that shot off. So not exactly the cleanest of defensive efforts at that individual moment. But the good news is that we looked confident. And again, it's the Tampa Bay Rowdies. Look at how the season has gone. If there's a word you could probably use during the good stretches for this club this season, it's just confident.
Yeah. A couple things I noticed going back and watching the highlights and the replays later. Ekra tries that same shot just like 3 or 4 minutes into the game. That same angle going for that same corner and just comes up, just goes a bit wide. And then, like you said, yeah, the Birmingham defender kind of peels off him a little bit. We create that lane that gives them the opening, but also when they flip around and show the like goalkeeper view, I think the defender shields the keeper because the keeper doesn't even make a move on it. I think he's totally frozen out. He's caught surprised by that as the ball heads into the corner. He doesn't see it coming until it's already halfway there and it's too late for him to make a move. I know officially it wouldn't count, but say give that guy an assist. I mean, look, no. Not trying to take anything away from Birmingham. They are a good team who deserve to be in that position. But the one thing the Rowdies will do is take advantage of mistakes if you make them. That's what they've done all season. And yeah, it was 1-0 and Birmingham had their chance. But if you know, going back later, like after the game, it was kind of like, okay, that was fun. And then it was like Evan Lauro had 2 saves on the night. And I was like, holy crap. We had one of those games again where that – Now they had chances. There were a couple shots that went wide, but the two that were on target, I mean, never in doubt. And Evan, or as we're gonna call him in the radio friendly version, Evan freaking Lauro, as he went into like berserker rage after the game, like just celebrating with the with Ralph's Mob and the Skyway Casuals. It was a good night. It was a good night.
It was a good night, especially considering that. When we all saw the lineup and we saw the fact that Steven Dos Santos was not going to be in this match, everybody's mind went back to what, you know, June and July look like.
Yeah.
When basically we were playing whole games and we weren't getting like a shot on goal. And, you know, we had Tejada come in and he put in a 76-minute effort. it's almost frustrating for him right now because he has a role. He does the role that he needs to do. Does it always equal goals? Does it always equal output? Not necessarily. You know, his he pushes up the field, specifically on that goal, right? Ekra and Antley are basically playing the ball back and forth between each other as they're going up the field. Tahad is doing a good job of pushing the defense back. He's doing a good job of making sure that the defense has to worry about Antley playing a ball through to him, which essentially is creating the space for you know, the other two players. And that's it's good because it's showing that his nose is in the goal, you know, as far as like his mind is right with what he needs to be doing. But just right now as it stands, defenses just aren't giving him any options. Now, granted, that's, you know, that, hey, you know, if you're concentrating on Tejada and you open up a lane for somebody else as a team, you're good with it. But man, has it got to be frustrating for him right now. And it, and honestly, it's been frustrating for most of the fan base this year.
Yeah, you know, he struggled to find fitness. He struggled to find, you know, consistent playing time. And when he's in to find that form, that you know, had people yelling, sign him up when he was a trialist. I'm confident he'll get there again. I just, he needs that time and he needs that ability to do that. And you know, if it was the regular season, if there was Open Cup or something like that, where you could maybe get him some more games, it could be a different story. You know what? We'll find out. And this, we'll hop to one of the listener questions right now because we've only really got a couple so far. But the big question, it's on our minds. I know it's going to be on the Louisville fans' minds too. Is Steven Dos Santos going to be back this weekend? What we were told last weekend was that was anticipated he'd be returning this weekend. The Neil's going to have his press call tomorrow. I'm sure someone's going to ask about it. We'll get some more some sound out of that and find out. Someone else who might be wondering about that is it's perfect segue in here. We've got Tom Dorsey back at USL Tactics coming in. I want to try and pick his mind on both the games, but John, when the lineups come out, when the game gets started last weekend and you see Steven Dos Santos isn't playing, what was your first reaction to that? Like, did that alter the way you looked at maybe the potential outcome of the game, or what were your thoughts when that news came out?
So I think I trust implicitly in pretty much all of the forward line options that Tampa has, but it certainly was an interesting choice. And I think whenever you see Jan Ekra included within that forward line, you're naturally leaning towards a little bit more of a midfield-centric, trying to control that middle-of-the-pitch area approach to the match, which against a team like Birmingham with your Anderson Asiedu types, you can have Haravo, Van Kaiazeel, and especially controlling the threat of Bruno Lapa. I thought that was a good decision, but at the same time, like, the omission of Dos Santos, certainly from the offensive perspective, is something that you're a bit concerned about, especially just given how inconsistently you've seen the playing time with Tejada so far this year. So I wasn't worried, but I did read into it as a choice that had consequences involved.
So the Rowdies get the win 1-0. It sounds really close. That's a close result no matter what happens. But the Rowdies played pretty comfortably the entire game. At halftime, there's some nerves going around. It's still zero on both sides of the board. But I felt kind of encouraged, especially with the amount of chances that Tampa Bay had created. Birmingham is a very solid defensive team. Made probably the best defense that the Rowdies had played up until that point. I'm guessing at least in terms of rank, but they looked pretty good in the first half, considering the lineup changes. They just needed to get onto that ball in the second half and finish the chances. What was your takeaway from the game? What did you like? You had made some things to look out for. You mentioned Asiedu. How did some of the guys perform? Some of the guys you said to keep an eye on perform. Who were you impressed with? And maybe was there anyone that kind of didn't live up to what you thought they could do?
Yeah. So in terms of maybe some of the expectations, I think certainly Lawrence White really outperformed what I was expecting from him. I think there's a tendency to think about him as someone who just recycles the ball a little bit, doesn't really get creative. But he was so key in switching play across the horizontal side of the pitch, breaking out, letting those transition opportunities come to fruition in a way that was really valuable. I think Birmingham put a premium on trying to close hard to the wings. So being able to switch play rapidly across the pitch opened up chances in a really meaningful way. So he was key there. Obviously, the three center backs, as always, were immense in this one. Birmingham only had, I think, 6 shots for the entirety of the game, which for them is, I mean, stunningly below average. And I think that speaks a lot to the control that Tampa was able to have in the midfield. And so you naturally have to think about Lewis Hilton in that context. For Birmingham, I think I was disappointed in what you got out of the aforementioned Bruno Lapa. Asiedu was able to get some looks where he was carrying the ball from deep, spraying passes a little bit, but Lapa was completely uninvolved. The forward line generally just couldn't get connected. And you have to give credit to Tampa for that, for the way that they pressed the buildup. There were some holes early, but that Tejada, Guenzati, Jan Ekra forward line did a really good job of denying the center of the pitch and making sure that the way that Birmingham traditionally has built up this season just wasn't a viable path. So I think largely it was just a good team performance for Tampa, but I didn't like Wank especially. He was my man of the match for this one, I think, and he's who I would highlight.
Go with that. I'm laughing because I keep thinking when you mentioned White, my thoughts go right to that shot he has in the first half, which I was standing behind the goal a couple rows up. So I from my angle, my perspective, I didn't realize until about 2 o'clock in the morning the next day when I started watching the highlights that I thought he'd hit the crossbar at first, that not that it had been headed off by one of the Birmingham defenders. But yeah, I was really impressed. You know, Nico Brett's the guy that gets kind of got all the attention this year with his goals. But I remember what Lapa did against Tampa Bay in previous games last season. So that's kind of the one that I was keeping an eye out for and to see the way that he was kind of taken out of the game. I don't know. I felt really good overall about even with Dos Santos out. Still never really felt troubled and felt like we were going to get one eventually. Wike, I mean, if just for his new hair job alone, because we're pretty sure he did some work on his hair before the game. Like that's man of the match for material right there. He was given the Volt jerseys a run for their money if they had been wearing those. I think it would have been cameras would have been melting down. Steven, you have any questions about Birmingham?
Let me ask you this. One thing that we had seen with the Rowdies towards the end of the season was some interesting rotation with Leo Fernandez sometimes playing a bit more like up top or maybe centrally compared to his wing role. Was it surprising to you that they went with Juan Tejada up top rather than some of that type of rotation that we had seen late in the season, when you might bring in somebody like a Dalgard, you know, playing out on the left wing?
Sure.
Was that a surprising choice, or was there something specific about Birmingham that made, you know, having Leo out on the wing maybe a better choice than, say, Dalgard at the moment?
So I think, obviously, the thing with putting Leo out on the wing is that he just gives you a much more viable offensive threat where he can dribble, he can cut inside, he'll give you some of that shot creation that Dalgard gives you to a certain extent, but there's nowhere near the same level of explosivity. And naturally, by doing so, you're limiting what the wide players on that flank for Birmingham are able to do because they have to be aware of that threat. Well, Birmingham, they try to look centrally in a lot of their buildup, but the end goal of that is working it wide to Johnny Dean on that right wing. And so by putting Fernandez out there, you're pinning Dean back, making him constantly aware of his defensive responsibilities. So just having the presence of Fernandez even limits what Birmingham can do offensively. And then if you're just thinking more broadly about the Tampa approach to the match, it's almost a statement of intent that you're going to go in, try to possess the ball, try to pin this Birmingham side back, and really rely on some of that movement that Fernandez can provide to you with that confidence that you're going to be in those high positions, and that the defensive responsibility, while still present and innate to that wingback role, is going to be less of a focus than giving that extra burst in the final third that you get from Leo. So overall, I think it was more of just a sign that Tampa expected to control this match and wanted to use whatever personnel they had to limit Birmingham's ability to strike back in transition. And I think that additionally, Tejada still gives you some of that movement, that creativity up top, where Fernandez is a more capable player in that role, but Tejada can be a sort of simulacrum of the abilities that Fernandez is giving you. So
now the big question here too is obviously the Rowdies goal was scored because of Antley's play with Ekra. Was this game, you could almost make an argument, was this game really defined by our ability of shutting down Birmingham's right wing, or was this game really defined by our ability being able to push up on our own right wing? I mean, was this really kind of a game of two sides of the field that we were able to win one better than the other? And or was this really just kind of an evenly balanced, like every facet of the game worked for the Rowdies this week?
I mean, the scoreline is almost misleading, and the shot gap as well, where Tampa really did feel like they were in control going both ways. Birmingham didn't have any good looks, if we're being honest here, and Tampa was generating a good amount of chances. And if you think about that goal, even before you get to the really nice interplay between Ekra and Antley, you've got the motion where Guenzatti is coming deep. He's drawing the defense completely out of shape. And that's what frees Ekra to find that space in the hole, to be able to involve Antley in the play, get that cut inside. And I mean, it's havoc from there, from the Birmingham defensive perspective. And I think you only are able to have that sort of right wing back Antley bombing up the pitch with the confidence that even if you lose possession, you're still in control defensively because you've got the best back three in the league. So I think it's sort of this dynamic where both sides of the ball kind of feed into one another, and the way that Tampa was exerting such control in both ends just kept feeding and feeding, let them really grab the game by the scruff of the neck and ultimately come out on top.
Now here's the big what if when it comes to the Birmingham, and I'll end it with this. Does the presence of Junior Flemings change this match result? And was that a huge factor potentially into why Birmingham was not quite able to get any offense going? Or do you think, in your opinion, that it wouldn't have changed anything?
I think that Birmingham's primary issue was just being able to build up and get into those positions where Flemings would be dangerous in the first place. He's certainly someone who provides a ton of danger in the final third, and he can sort of create something out of nothing in a lot of scenarios. But at the end of the day, you have to be able to drive possession to his feet in a dangerous area. And Birmingham really wasn't even able to get to that point. For me, it was that inability to have Bruno Lapa come deep and advance the ball, have Johnny Dean get engaged. For me, Ryan James was a really big omission from the starting lineup. I mean, we know from Pittsburgh in the past and what he's done this season that he can really get up and down the flank in a super efficacious way. And I thought they were missing that presence in terms of just shuttling the ball back and forth, and it hurt them in the end. And he came on as a sub and didn't have the biggest impact, but I think he was almost a bigger loss than Flemings.
All right, so let's put Birmingham in the rear view, and let's look ahead to this weekend, because I wish it was already here. Honestly, I was at work today, and I said something about tomorrow being Friday, and everyone just kind of looked at me like, no, tomorrow's Thursday. And I was just thinking about the game. So Louisville gets past Charlotte. We've all been saying Charlotte was going to be a hard out for anybody, and I think we all predicted I know Steven and I did. I don't remember if we roped you into this one too or not. I honestly thought Charlotte was going to walk out of there with a close win, but Louisville gets the 1-0 win courtesy of a late penalty. Like, the Rowdies game is over. The Mob's packing up. They're going through cleaning up the stands, picking up the trash and everything, which is always cool to see. And I find a group just like over by one of the sections with a cell phone out, and everyone's yelling, "Penalty to Louisville! Penalty to Louisville!" And we're all watching on the phone there. So Louisville will advance. Surprise, surprise! Louisville's in the Eastern Conference Final for what is it, seven straight years now. Maybe there's some things we should consider before we start making predictions. The Eastern Conference has gone, according to bracket, there weren't any real upsets. You've got a rematch of last year's Eastern Conference Final, although this year it's going to be in Tampa Bay rather than Louisville. I was telling Stephen earlier, I saw a Louisville fan tweet something about how, well, if Birmingham held the Rowdies to one goal, and Birmingham's pretty good, we should be feeling pretty confident. And Nick Murray from USL headquarters tweeted back at him, "You should also be concerned that Birmingham, a very good team, was held to 0.3 XG on the night." So looking at this game, and I know you've already written, you've updated your Google Sheets for these games coming up and made some predictions, and I don't want to spoil your predictions just yet. What do you think you're going to see in this game? What does Tampa Bay have to do to win? What does Louisville have to do to win? And what do you think the outcome's going to be?
Yeah, so I think the challenge for any team that's approaching a matchup against Tampa is, how do you solve that back three? And for Louisville, they have certainly Cameron Lancaster as that primary threat up front. But, I mean, as we saw with Nico Brett, one striker is enough to do it. And that's where someone like Capello De Piccolo is going to be so important. I traditionally have thought of him as more of a pretty basic central midfield player, certainly someone who's effective. But he's really found a lot of joy this season as almost like a second striker, complementing Lancaster, making these smart later runs. So if he can maybe pull some defenders out of space, that'll be big. But again, there's still the strength of that back three to worry about. And so something you saw in attacking that Charlotte, their setup, which is at least stylistically similar to Tampa's, if not as effective at the end of the day, they would tuck in that left winger, Jorge Gonzalez, and then you would get Jonathan Gomez bombing up the left side of the pitch. Well, that pulls in the defensive wing back, and that leaves space where, if you're the central defenders now, you have to go out and address that, and it sort of wreaks havoc. And if you don't respond properly, you're going to end up with really sloppy one-on-ones, like the one that led to the penalty that won the game for Louisville. So in that sense, I do think it'll be interesting to see who gets the start with that wingback role. Will it be Fernandez again? Will it be Dalgard? Another area that I'll be interested to be looking at is the role that Jan Ekra plays. He really was more of an out-and-out right-winger sort of forward type in this last Birmingham match. I would almost expect him to play in more of a central attacking mid, central midfielder role, just to get that extra body against what Louisville does. Another key facet of how they drive offense is these late runs from Corbin Bone from deeper in the midfield. So just putting Ekra in a more central position is going to negate that to a certain extent. If you're Tampa trying to break down this side, Louisville, they strengthened as the game went on against Charlotte, but early on they were bleeding a lot of chances with the overlaps that you would get from Jake Arman on the left wing. Charlotte found a lot of joy with sort of these long switches, which you saw from Tampa really effectively against Tulsa. So it's something that they're able to pull off. And especially when you have, say, Connor Antley bombing up the wing, that's always a threat. I ultimately have this predicted as a 2-0 win for Tampa Bay, but I think it's the cardinal sin of predicting USL playoff matches to bet against Louisville. I did it last round, just like you guys did. I just think that tactically this isn't the best matchup for City. And I think that based on the evidence that we've seen all season with how solid this Tampa Rowdies team is defensively, they're not going to give up the sloppy goal. They're not going to let Louisville take control, keep possession in the final third. And that's the way that Louisville wins games. And if they can't pull off that style, then I don't see what the route is for them necessarily.
How much of your 2-0 result, and we're assuming we're going to find out more tomorrow, how big of a difference would the presence or absence of Steven Dos Santos be when it comes to the way you evaluate this game?
I think he would be valuable to have here. I think some of the hold-up play that he could give you in transition, really maximizing the movement you can get off the ball while he's sort of holding it down, would be valuable. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's make or break with him. Ultimately, I think the role that you're going to see from Fernandez or something like that might be more influential to the final analysis here.
And just looking ahead, because we know we have some of our friends in Louisville have encouraged their fellow fans in purple to tune in tonight to hear some tactical breakdown. Whoever wins this game will be hosting the winner from the Western Conference 8 days later, Sunday after Thanksgiving coming up. So looking at that game, it's Orange County and San Antonio. What do you see going on in that match, and what do you what are you keeping an eye out there? Who do you think is going to come out of that from the West to come to Al Lang? I mean, to whoever wins this game.
Yeah, so Orange County is one of the most defensive sides in the league, especially down the stretch. And they've done quite well in that context. I think they've given up like one goal in 7 matches or something crazy like that. At the same time, they struggle to create things offensively. I mean, most of their attacking success in the playoffs thus far has been your route one, very direct long balls into the feet of Ronaldo Damas, who sort of has been one of the breakout stars of the USL season out of the Western Conference. San Antonio, meanwhile, has, other than Tampa, looked like maybe the strongest side in the entirety of the playoffs. They've pretty much romped over San Diego and RGV. They hardly possess the ball at all, and they're incredibly effective at picking moments to press you with everything they've got, create turnovers, and from there you play into the feet of Jose Gallegos, Marcus Epps, these really explosive wide creators who can dribble through a team like nobody's business. At the same time, much like Tampa, they've got this really solid 3 at the back that they can rely on, that when push comes to shove, if they need to sit back defensively, they're very capable of doing so. I would be surprised if San Antonio lost that, and I have them projected as a 2-0 winner again. But there's a real scenario where Orange County gets a somewhat fluky early goal off of a set piece or a long ball where something goes awry, and you just don't break this team down, because if they're able to put 9-10 men behind the ball, they're incredibly hard to beat. They're just well-structured. I mean, they're sort of led by Michael Orozco, who has some of that U.S. national team experience as a center back. But at the end of the day, I do think that the explosivity in the form of San Antonio is going to carry them. And that sets up an interesting matchup against a team like Tampa that I've not thought a ton about yet, but that's what I'm projecting at the moment.
I think one thing we're all overlooking right now is the fact that this is a 10 p.m. Eastern kickoff for a Western Conference game, which means we know it's going to penalties, because Western Conference always go to penalties when they start late at night. You mentioned Marcus Epps, and I had forgotten, honestly, and it's Western Conference. I don't keep track of who's where so much. That would be a little bit of a homecoming, Marcus Epps playing college soccer at USF over in Tampa. Steven, real quick, you know who else has Rowdy's connections that's on that San Antonio side?
Not off the top of my head immediately, no.
PC.
Oh, duh.
Oh,
yeah.
Sure.
I didn't even think about it, but yeah, of course. We were all talking about that at TIFO Painting for the first week of the playoffs, and just blew my mind.
That could be an interesting return. I'd be curious.
He has been awesome in the playoffs for them.
That's probably the matchup I'd like to see, just because of the connections from NASL days. we'll see what happens. I will admit I already have San Antonio fans like DMing me about good places to stay and everything. So they are feeling very confident. I'm just saying it all comes down to who the announcers refer to as a penalty save specialist when the penalties start, because it's going to go to penalties. It's what always happens. And whoever gets kind of the spotlight early on seems to somehow channel that energy. All right, Steven, you got any thoughts or questions or comments about Louisville? I feel like I asked all the big questions right up front there and kind of cut you out, but.
No, I think you did a fine job. I actually don't really have anything for you, John. Totally fine with me.
All right. Well, John, thanks again. Go ahead one more time. Plug where everybody can find you at, other than when it's not like 3 o'clock in the morning after the Rowdies have won a game. And I'm like, hey, what you doing Wednesday? Where else?
Yeah, just at USL Tactics on Twitter. I'm mixing it up a little bit between the playoff reviews and getting into a little bit of off-season content as we're seeing some announcements of re-signings and some coaching changes. So, I mean, I have no life, so I'm covering basically everything that happens in this league. So if you need the coverage, I'm there.
Yeah, I can. I imagine the wheels are turning when you hear Mark Lowry to Indy 11, and they start announcing some things for next year. So that's going to be. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. That's going to be interesting. See what happens there. All right, John. Thank you again for joining us. We appreciate it. Well, you might be hearing from me at about a couple hours after the game on Saturday night if all goes well.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Hoping for it. I need something to do that week, so. I'll take it. All right, John, thanks again for joining us. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
No problem. See you later.
Yep.
Like, literally, Stephen, I got home from the game, and I'm had to grab something to eat because I realized about midway through the second half, I was like, I should have eaten dinner before the game tonight. I had a couple barbecue sandwiches out at the Skyway Casuals tailgate, but by no means did it constitute a full dinner. And I was just thinking, I wonder if I could get John this week. Like right as he posts this like 7 or 8 tweet thread kind of breaking down Rowdy's Birmingham. And I'm like, yeah, that's why we're bringing him on. It was either Rowdy's Birmingham or Louisville Charlotte. So it was one of those. It was like, yep, there's why. Because, you can come here and just get Rowdy's win good from us, or you can get some actual insight from the man doing some of the work behind the scenes for the club. Hopefully he'll be gainfully employed by the club for at least one more week. I'll take it. All right. Anything else we need to say about Rowdies in Birmingham before we move on?
I mean, besides the fact that it was really disappointing that no Birmingham fans made the trip for the most part in any kind of organized fashion. That was very sad.
Yeah. I did see someone scattered here and there. I saw people wearing like Birmingham something t-shirts and stuff. So either they happened to be in the area or they made the trip. But yeah, that sounds like it will not be an issue this weekend, as Louisville was buying plane seats and hotels and bus tickets. And I've got Louisville fans in my DMs asking about, where are they going to set their tailgate up at? And it's going to be fun. Like we have not had, I'm going to say we will have not have had an away crowd like this since probably that first USL game.
Yep. That's what I was saying on Twitter this week. First major organized away support in 4.5 years,
which is good. And like, if we had played Louisville earlier in the season, it probably would have been maybe not at the same level because let's face it, it's the Eastern Conference final. Plus, it's Tampa Bay in November, which is probably by great measures a more enjoyable place than lots of other parts around the country in the middle of November also. So we're looking forward to it. Like, we're going to see some of our friends. We're going to make some new ones. We're going to hate them for 90 minutes, preferably not an extra 30 minutes, and then however long extra time would be, because this will hopefully end in regulation. And then we're going to all be friends again afterwards. They're even like, hey, we're bringing bourbon. We're bringing this. I'm like, okay, we're going to have some fun. We did get a request. I don't know if you want to do this during listener questions or we could do it now. Like kind of a guide to around Al Lang for visiting fans. Places to stay, things to do, places to eat. All the great bars you go to and get hammered at on like a nightly basis, Stephen.
I that's why I'm kind of bewildered that you decided to actually ask me that. Like, oh, sure, I know where all the fun hip places are in St. Pete. Absolutely.
That's what I'm known for.
Doesn't everybody know that you go to Stephen Cundiff for, like, you know, the places to go list of St. Pete? Hello?
Well, luckily, Mitch did jump in and give us a quick save. So in terms of places to stay, there's tons of hotels in and around the area. The Hilton is literally right across from the stadium. It's where the away teams stay. It's also potentially pretty pricey going into a holiday week. So check around. You might be able to find some places. You might want to, you know, stay in Tampa and arrange transportation to St. Pete from there. But at the stadium, around the stadium, before the game, I know the Mob is. I think the Mob's tailgating in the lot this time. I think because the Corrigan status was still unknown or uncertain until now. I saw a mention of a table for the new toy drive that was going to be set up. It said next to the Mob tailgate, so there'll be the Mob tailgate. There'll be the Skyway Casuals' infamous Turn 5 tailgate smack dab in the middle of the parking lot. Just look for the giant tent with like 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 flags flying from the top of it. You cannot miss it. Come on over. Everybody is welcome there, home fans, away fans. Well, I'm not going to say all away fans. I'll just say these are the only people wearing purple that will be allowed to come visit the tailgate on a regular basis. Sure. I mean, Louisville fans, if you're trying to find it, just look for your guy Patrick. He knows exactly where to find the tailgate. He'll set you up with us. We'll be friendly for a little bit, and then we won't, and then we will again. Then also, there'll be some people, likely be some people over at Corrigan's, little bar right across the street from the parking lot at Al Lang before the game. There will definitely be people there afterwards, win or lose. I'm going over either way. I've decided, so I will be there. It hasn't been open for a couple of weeks now for various reasons, but like Steven Dos Santos, we'll be available this weekend. We hope. We've been told, so we'll see. Yeah, that's it. And you know, the what's allowable, what's not allowable to bring into the stadium list has been out there. Have at it.
Can I say something about that real quick? Just because, like, literally I was part of those darn discussions.
He's taking a sip to clear his throat here, cleanse the palate, because he's got some words.
4.5 years ago, the last, you know, actual, like, real away section, we were cool with whatever the heck Orlando wanted to bring.
Yeah.
We didn't care. The difference was they had their own segregated section out on the bay side of the stadium.
The problem their own is, entrance, their own yep, everything.
Exactly. We didn't care what they did. But there's a hospitality, like, massive tent area. There's, like, a corporate sale thing that goes on. That whole area is occupied.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason why all of this is happening. Because we don't have a way to segregate Louisville fans. And we don't want a situation where a bunch of casual, rowdy fans that probably maybe haven't even gone to a game in a couple of years because it's playoffs. You're going to get, you know, attention from people that don't always go to games during the seasons, during the regular season especially. We don't want those people screwing with Louisville fans and their stuff. And because we don't have a way of realistically segregating those groups away from each other, because they're going to be inside the main building. That's the only reason why any of this is happening. On top of that, what we're looking at for rules, from what I saw, like that one tweet about, you know what? Yeah, that's like literally what the rules we had when we went to Louisville last year, because I was there. I was in Louisville. That we weren't allowed flags or drums or stuff. No smoke, no nothing like that. We had a couple of banners that were zip tied to.
Yeah, you know, I remember seeing it on TV. Looked really nice.
Yeah, they were zip tied to the thing, and that was it. That was what we were allowed to do. Otherwise, it was just scarves and singing. So I don't know. Some of the, trust me, I have been vocal for 10 years plus that I am totally cool with letting away fans do what they do at our building, because to me, that's what football is all about.
Well, and I just posted something about that. Like I would prefer that too, because I would like that treatment when I go to an away game.
Exactly.
I
mean, I get
to an extent, maybe not the smoke, maybe not the drums, but flags, banners, whatever. But I still go back. I still remember, and I don't remember. I think it was a playoff game, or either a playoff or an Open Cup game. I think it was a playoff game against Cincinnati when the Cincinnati fans were popping off smoke and security was going after him. And we were like, no, let him do it.
Yeah. I don't care. I know me personally, I'm good with it. That's always been my position. So I don't know. I get why some people are rubbed the wrong way by what happened. And it's an unfortunate set of circumstance because we don't have the ability of pre-planning it to the level that we maybe want to. Like, 5 weeks ago, there's no way of knowing that there's going to be 300 Louisville fans coming down, for a game when you've got a hospitality area that you've got a corporate sale for that's been booked throughout. You really can't plan for that. So I think that's the thing that stinks. Like I said, I'm with you, and I've always said this. Like, and there are a lot of people in the Rowdies fan base that disagree with me, by the way. Like, I want to make sure that, like, There are Rowdies fans in the fan base that want the heavy restrictions on away fans, but I'm one of the people that are like, I'm cool with whatever. So it's an unfortunate circumstance, but they're going to have 300 people there. I don't think that's going to really impact their ability at making their presence known. I mean, come on, let's be real.
Right.
There's only 7,000 seats in the stadium. Well, maybe 8 if you really want to get tricky about it. But I mean, 300 people is still a pretty decent chunk. You're not going to be able to just ignore that,
I want to make sure I preface this by saying I'm not encouraging or condoning this if this were to happen. But I remember, I think it's one of the last, well, I mean, it was one of the first times, and I think last times that we went to Lockhart. And they were very strict about, no smoke, no this, no that. And somehow, I don't know who it was. I couldn't tell you. It definitely couldn't have been anybody from our group, because we were big rules respecters. The smoke was going off, and every time the security guy turned his back and then he turned around and was like, what are you guys doing? We're like, I don't know. Someone just came over here and I ran off. It's kind of more fun if you're doing it when you're breaking the rules. But, I'm not encouraging anybody to do that. You shouldn't do that.
No, don't be a jerk. It's just like, come on. But yeah, anyways, I just wanted to touch on that real quick because it was just, kind of annoyed me. But anyways, yeah. I'm looking forward.
I'm sure we did plenty of similar grumbling last year. So yeah, whatever. It's the way it is. It's part of the deal.
Yeah.
It'll be fine. All right. So we do have some non-Rowdies Birmingham, non-Rowdies Louisville news before we get to Louisville in a minute. And then we do have... I'll double check. Maybe we have some more now, but we do have at least one listener question. All right, Steven, let's get to the league and the club news. What do we got?
Well, yeah. So club news first. I will go ahead and make sure that we've announced on our Twitch pregame show. We always give away, we do a Twitch score prediction for those that are watching the show, and we always got some signed gear and stuff to give away. Jonathan Silva was the only one to predict a 1-0 scoreline. So congratulations to John Silva. He gets the, I believe it's a full team signed team photo, I believe is the intent. And and also a little motley group of No Limits playoff Rowdies gear. So that's going to be heading his way this weekend. So congratulations to John, and thank you to everybody that participated. There's a lot of people in chat. We had some hecklers in the building too, which was always appreciated because we always like being able to interact with you guys who are listening and watching us. So that was always fun, but it was a great show. I thought we had a lot of fun. When it comes to John Silva's role, For those of you that don't know, John Silva is actually on the board of directors with Ralph's Mob, and he is in charge of Ralph's Mob charities. That's his primary role. Ralph's Mob Charities is doing a, I don't want to call it a fundraiser. I don't think you'd call it a fundraiser, but they are doing a collection for items to donate to All Children's Hospital this weekend. So pretty much what you would think for, you know, those types of toy drives, you know, maybe board games, action figures, coloring books, things like that. That is going to be what they are going to be collecting. So make sure if you want to be a part of that, go ahead and bring some stuff. I would bet that more than likely they'll be collecting that stuff out in the parking lot before the game. So that would be where I would want to go. So I want to make sure that that was out there, that everybody knew was happening, because it is it's coming up on holiday season. So we want to make sure that those kids are getting taken care of that are up in that hospital. When it comes to league news, Matt, I'm going to let you take this because there's been a lot of movement around the league by a lot of teams that aren't in the playoffs anymore.
Yeah, we were just before we came on, I was looking at the USL front page website, and it was like, these players returning this year and this player signing a new contract. And I was like, man, it's nice not to have to read that stuff from our team because that means you're not in the playoffs. All right. Yeah, there are a lot of coaching moves going on. The two big ones. So I think a day or two after the last round when El Paso went out, probably more than that. It was just last week, I think. El Paso's head coach, and I believe he was also technical director, Mark Lowry, who we know from his days with Jacksonville Armada, stepped down, and everyone started saying, you know, kind of going, "Ooh, what's he doing?" A lot of people said he must be going, must be an MLS opening. He's you know, got his name in for, or is going to get hired for. And just based on what we have seen in the past from MLS, USL movement players and coaches, I was kind of thinking, it might be more likely that he's going to be an assistant, but that doesn't even really necessarily feel like a huge step up, depending on what team it is. Turns out Lowry is coming back to the Eastern Conference. Well, at least we assume the Eastern Conference. Who knows what USL will decide for next year. Mark Lowry has been hired and is taking over as head coach and technical director for Indy 11. Indy had a rough season this year, didn't qualify for the playoffs, probably the most underwhelming team of the season, because you would think going into the season they're a likely playoff team. They have talented players, and for whatever reason, it didn't get done. And they kind of had a little bit of a rough stretch, I want to say, last year, but it's hard to read anything in the last year with COVID and the return to play protocols and everything. It's hard to put any huge emphasis on those results, in my opinion. But Martin Rennie was relieved of his duties earlier on in the season, and they had kind of operated under an interim coach. And Lowry, who our good friend Nipun Chopra retweeted, mentioned that Lowry has been on Indy's radar for a couple years now. Before he went to El Paso, he almost got the Indy job over Martin Rennie. And so it's, you know, it's someone that they had their eyes on, someone they've kept obviously in contact with, and is coming to Indy. That's a huge move because Lowry has been, he was successful in Jacksonville. He was very successful in El Paso. He's a talented coach. He's a smart young guy. He's going to be, I mean, that to me, it's like a statement of intent from Indy. When you start to kind of wonder, you know, their stadium plan just kind of seems to be on the back burner a lot with, in terms of the way local government's treating it. And it's been, you know, it seems like the franchise is at kind of one of those crossroads where it's like, do you invest and make major improvements? Do you, you know, keep it kind of going at the same level, or is it time to toss in your cards? And I didn't want to see Indy do that. I think they've been too successful to end up in that kind of situation. But going out and getting Lowry to me is a big freaking deal. It really is. So I'll be interested to see. They started announcing some player retentions for next year. He's got a talented core, and Lowry's going to be able to recruit some guys. And I mean, he's been successful everywhere. I don't see any reason right now why you don't look at Indy as being a playoff contender for next year. A little bit closer to home, Paul Dalglish, former FC Tampa Bay head coach, took over in Miami, coached Miami for a number of seasons through a number of leagues, had some success in NPSL, stepped back last season, but then came back as they were not performing on the pitch to their liking. It was kind of a weird announcement because Miami announced that they and Paul had reached an agreement for him to leave, because he was also head coach and technical director. And then Paul posted a thread of highly complimentary, thankful, grateful tweets. So it's like they're parting on good terms, at least publicly. Miami kind of seemed to go out of their way to not imply that he'd been fired, other than they just said, hey, let's make a change. So now Paul's out there. El Paso needs a coach. Don't know if it's going to be him. The other kind of newsworthy one was New Mexico's head coach and technical director had stepped down at the end of this season, and their first assistant coach has been named the new head coach and technical director. So that job's filled. Louisville's coming in, and they had when they got rid of Hackworth earlier on in the season, which makes me kind of wonder. You think we're gonna see Hackworth at Al Lang on Saturday? Gonna see him back in the big floppy rowdy's hat and some green and gold?
Do you know how much joy that would bring me to have Hackworth so, like
in the mob section,
cheering his hometown club,
dressed like your dad? I can't tell you how much I want to see this.
That would be so great.
It's not going to surprise me one bit.
And you know the funny part about it is that it wouldn't be a slight on Louisville at all.
No.
It wouldn't be. It would be genuine, like, hey, this is the club I literally grew up watching as a child. I'm going to go
and
support
the club
him.
I most recently coach. Like, he's got friends everywhere in that stadium. Yeah, it'd be funny. It'd be interesting to see. So Miami needs a head coach. El Paso needs a head coach. And you know what just occurred to me? I think Juan Guerra gets one of those jobs.
Yeah.
I don't know who the hot up-and-coming potential USL coaches are in terms of from the assistant coaching ranks, but Juan's done a lot of the coaching courses. He's worked in Phoenix. He's worked in Indy. I could see Juan going to El Paso. I think Miami's going to go for maybe a bigger name. Some of the other names being mentioned were, I think I saw Bruce Arena's son's name out there somewhere, who coached. I believe he spent a year as a college coach, and he's been in MLS. I saw Anthony Pulis' name pop up again. Like,
yeah,
okay, sure, why not? I don't think it's going to get you. I think he's an Inter-Miami assistant coach right now, so I guess at least you don't have to pay a lot of moving costs is the benefit. I was never hugely impressed with him during his time with Orlando City B or St. Louis. But, you know, hey, that'd be fun. I wouldn't mind beating him several times. Him and Neil kind of had a little bit of a contentious relationship when he was at Orlando. I could see that maybe spicing up the Miami Tampa Bay rivalry. Might have to get an official name for that at some point, and that way people will stop misusing Florida Derby to describe that that game, because that is extremely not it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what happens. I'll be very interested to see what happens.
I'd say you definitely have a point with Juan Guerra. I mean, it's with as many, and more specifically, just because of the sheer amount of jobs that are kind of open right now,
mm-hmm.
You know, and
there'll be more probably coming up. So
I mean, possibly, yeah. I mean, obviously, it's always possible. But, yeah, I think that's an intriguing thought, if that's the direction that Juan wants to go. I mean, he's already out west, you know, so a short hop over to El Paso, you know? That's a
could
thought.
Be good. You know, El Paso fans would be happy poaching someone from Phoenix.
yeah, right.
You know, bring a little bit more juice to that. Not that it's needed, but you know, it'd be good. All right. John did our good Louisville preview. Here's the stats that we have on hand and making from them what we will. Some things to look at going into this game. So next up, this Saturday at Al Lang, the Eastern Conference Final, a rematch of last year's Eastern Conference Final. Your Tampa Bay Rowdies, my best suit all impression there, versus Louisville City FC. Louisville comes in with an 18-7-7 record. They are 6-5-5 away, 3-2-0 in their last five. Their head coach is Danny Cruz. Their last game was a 1-0 win over Charlotte in the Eastern Conference semifinals. The last time these two clubs met were last year's Eastern Conference final in Louisville, where the Rowdies rode a early goal from Zach Steinberger and
Quinzotti had the second goal.
I thought it was. The Rowdies won that game. Lots of Iron Brew was consumed. By the way, I need to mention there is something of a bet on the line this weekend between myself and Patrick from Louisville. Except instead of the loser doing something, the winner has to. If the Rowdies win, we both agreed we were going to do a shoey, which is like chugging beer out of a shoe, like literally a shoe you just took off your foot. However, if the Rowdies win, I got to chug an Iron Brew, don't I? Like, it has to be that. And if Louisville wins, Patrick's going to chug, I assume, a beer. Maybe we can pour a whole bottle of bourbon into a shoe or something. We'll have to arrange, like, where this is going to happen. Might have to do it, like, back out at the tailgate after the game. We'll see. We'll work it out from there. The stat leaders for Louisville. John mentioned him. We talked about him. Cameron Lancaster with 20 goals on the season leads them by a wide margin. Paolo DiPiccolo has 9 goals. Kyle Grieg with 5. Lancaster also has the most shots with 78. He scored the penalty in last week's game against Charlotte to push Louisville through to the final. And I was trying to look up this year to see how many penalties the Rowdies have given up, like how many they've. How many shots the penalty? I know Laura saved two, but how many penalties has he faced? Because Lancaster is without a doubt a penalty specialist. He's had he's basically Seba Guinzotti in purple in terms of his scoring potential and especially his talent from the spot as well too. Assists for Louisville: Brian Ombi with 11, Jonathan Gomez 8, Corbin Bone with 5. Ombi also has the most chances, with Gomez and Niall McCabe tied for second with 42. Corbin Bone checks in with 34. Chris Hubbard has 39 saves for Louisville and 6 clean sheets. Discipline's not an issue for this game for either side, thankfully. I pulled up. I did the team comparison. Another one of these games where both sides are pretty evenly matched. I'll get to it in a second. So both sides have played 34 games. This includes playoffs. The Rowdies have scored one fewer goal with 62 than Louisville with 63. But we did just score 6 against Tulsa. So that's kind of evening up that stat a little bit, where it may not have done that before. Shots on target, 177 for Tampa Bay, 185 for Louisville. Both teams hovering right around 50%. Technically, Louisville will be 51 if you round up for shooting accuracy. Rowdies with a slightly better conversion rate if you round up to 18%, 17 for Louisville. Assists fairly equal, 42 to 45. Defensively, again, is where you see a difference in these two teams. Tampa Bay has conceded 12 fewer goals, one-third as the amount of goals that Louisville's conceded. Louisville had 37, Tampa Bay with 25. Tampa Bay has kept almost twice as many clean sheets, 16-9. Shots faced are fairly equal, 92-96. Rowdies have won 309 tackles, 260 for Louisville. Both teams are essentially equal in a tackle success rate, 61.3 to 61.2. Rowdies have won about 250 more duels for a higher duel success rate also, 53% to 49%. Distribution-wise, about 800 and about 1,200 passes between the two teams. Very similar passing accuracy. Rowdies with about 20 fewer successful crosses, but a slightly higher crossing accuracy. Rowdies with 50 more dribbles at 256 to 206. Dribble success rate, 56% for the Rowdies, 50% basically for Louisville. And discipline-wise, 416 fouls won to 449 conceded for Tampa Bay, 444 won to 479 conceded for Louisville. Tampa Bay's got a lot fewer yellow cards, 22 fewer, with 60 for Tampa Bay, 82 for Louisville. Tampa Bay's had one red card, none for Louisville. There'll be some fouls, but it should be a fairly clean game. Defensively, again, is where the Rowdies make a little bit of a difference, and then everywhere else, they are pretty similarly matched. This will be another fairly equal game. It's going to be which team can create and capitalize on chances and avoid making mistakes or taking advantage of the other team's mistakes. Steven, we've managed to get this far without having to put our honor and integrity on the line. It's time for predictions. It's time for predictions. What do you say we're going to see at the end, at the final whistle this weekend? I'm putting my head down because I'm nervous.
So
I said five before, right? I'm kind of up to like a six or seven before the show even ends.
Louisville plays a very aggressive 4-3-3, and it's going to be interesting because I don't see how they are going to be able to maintain a possession against a team like the Rowdies with the type of formations that are going up against each other. You know, I don't know during the course of the season how much experience, you know, Louisville has had facing the type of, you know, 3-2-3-2 like formation that we play basically. And it's been a thing that has been a thorn in the side of a lot of clubs, obviously, that we've had to play against where we don't, you know, play against them very often. So I think all of the, because I think that was something we commented on earlier this season, was that most of our first game matchups for the opponents we played this season were, we were almost undefeated.
Yeah.
Against teams that we were playing for the first time. And I don't necessarily know how Louisville, with their setup, gets by that. I don't know how they necessarily become the exclusion to the rule. You know, they've got tons of talent, obviously. It goes without saying. You don't get to this far without having tons of talent. And they're Louisville. You know, they're one of the powerhouses of the entire league.
You don't get this far 7 years in a row.
Well, yeah, I mean that too. Well, there's a lot of luck that goes involved with that. But, I mean, obviously, seven straight conference championships is just, like, stupid consistent. But I think ultimately, I think the Rowdies are able to maintain that, the possession numbers, they're able to maintain the pressure. I think Louisville has the ability to get one. I think they do get one. I don't think it'll be a shutout. So I'm going 2-1 Tampa Bay Rowdies because I think Dos Santos will be back. And so that'll be the primer for that guess. If Dos Santos is back, I'm going 2-1 Tampa Bay Rowdies.
You mentioned possession stats. Louisville's average possession, 55%. Tampa Bay's 50%. All in all, shaping up to be my least favorite kind of game, and that is a great one for the neutral. I'm not a neutral. I hate games like this. Give me a 6-2 against Tulsa. That's not going to happen in this game. I mean, we're making predictions tonight without the benefit of the knowledge about Steven Dos Santos' status. I still like our chances either way. I agree. Like, it's the Eastern Conference final. This is not going to be a shutout. Like, Louisville's too talented. They've got too many options. They've got too much experience. They've got too much history with this round of the playoffs to go out on a shutout. On the other hand, we said Birmingham wasn't going to get shut out either, and that there was no way that game was finishing 1-0. At least I said that 17 times in the second half, and it worked out. Yeah, it's not going to be very exciting, but I'm going with the 2-1 to Tampa Bay also. Just give me an early goal, please, for us, not for them. Just give me an early goal.
Right.
Because you saw it against Birmingham. Like, and this is something we've played this year, like the times that we've gone down early or gone behind early. And it's not that we have the Sterling record when giving up the first goal, but we haven't seen them lose confidence. We haven't seen the like drop in body language that we've seen in years past. Like, this is a team that they give up a goal, they're still emotionally, mentally, everything. They're still in it. They're still attacking. But when they score an early goal, you see the other team just become discombobulated because they know that they've got to work twice as hard now against that defense to try and get one back and then start thinking about how to get another one for a win. And when teams get discombobulated, that's when the rowdies tend to take advantage and you start to see a 2 or a 3-0 score line. So to me, the key to the game is getting an early goal. I remember reading somewhere, I don't remember where, I give credit to it, that at least earlier on in the season, Louisville had a problem with kind of leaking goals around the end of halves. So while an early goal is my favorite kind of goal, I also love a just before halftime goal because that kind of takes the sting out, takes momentum back a little bit, or piles on the pressure. Ideally, going into halftime with a 2-0 lead with an early goal and a just before halftime goal would be great. Unlikely that's going to happen because that would be too much of a calming effect, and I don't think we're going to be lucky enough to get that this game. This is going to be a hell of a game. Like, this is the matchup the league wanted. This is the matchup the fans wanted. The Western Conference fans that have been in touch were like, hey, we want to come play you guys because, you know, I'm sure they would say it to Louisville too. But like, this, whoever gets to the final is going to earn it, and whoever wins the final will have earned it. Like, you can say what you want about Phoenix and El Paso going out early. There's no asterisks on this. Like, everybody had to fight to get there. It's been a great playoff so far. You know, starting off with no B teams or two teams to you know, huge favorites going out in kind of shock upsets. You got some good results for some new teams coming to the playoffs. And up until now, it's been win or go home, but whoever wins is going home and they're going to play again next week. And whoever loses is going home too. Like, it feels like one of those, like, the season could end tomorrow, but it could go on forever, but it's not. It's over after next week, regardless of what happens. So, yeah. 2-1 to the Rowdies. I think I've talked myself up to an 8. All right. Steven, let's wrap this up before I hit 10 and I turn into the Hulk myself, please. Anything else we need to throw out there?
I think we are good to go. Do you have a specific we love you for this past weekend?
So last weekend was the first time that I spent the whole 90 minutes in the new standing supporter section. Mm-hmm. in in there for the whole crowd. And I was like, well, I'll come do this for the first half. Maybe I'll wander around a little bit in a second. Maybe I'll go up to the press. Even like Dan, you know, Dan was like the next aisle over from me. And about 20-30 minutes in, he's like, I'm going up to the press table area because my view here is awful. And he comes back about 5 minutes later. He's like, yeah, I couldn't stay up there. I couldn't pass up the atmosphere. No, man, it was rocking. It was everybody in that section. Yeah, that's who it is. I want to see all of you guys back. I want to see more of you guys back. And we just do what you did last week, because we had a hell of a lot of fun. And it was fun having my annual observation on Monday with no voice. But I got to look at my principal and say, I was at the Rowdies on Saturday, and I've seen her at Rowdies games before, so she knows. It's legit. It was all good.
No, I was up this past weekend. I was up on the capo stand the whole match. And so, yeah, that was which isn't something I've done more than, I think, like, I don't know, what, three or four times over the course of the last two seasons. So, you know, that was definitely, you know, it was fun. It was good to be a part of that on a full time this week. I don't know what we're planning on doing for this weekend for capo stands, but I'll probably be up there at some point again. But yeah, I think I will mimic your We Love You, because the sections have been fantastic these two playoff rounds. And the energy has definitely been something we haven't seen in a long, long time, especially considering it's COVID. It's, you know, the first time we're really getting a chance to really embrace the standing section for, you know, high profile games. You know, it has been truly, truly exciting and unique and new, and I've loved every minute of it. So, yeah, my We Love You is to everybody in that. Everybody that's in the supporter sections, 100%. You guys are awesome. Let's keep this going. That said, let's go ahead and wrap things up, and let's get out of here. Thank you so much to Wolfface for the great introduction music, Radio St. Pete Online for this amazing platform to host a live show, and Shamrock Pub, our friends in Sarasota. If you are listening, please share this with your friends. Give a subscription if you want to make sure you never miss an episode. If you are listening on a platform that allows for ratings and reviews, go ahead and throw one up there. And we definitely want to make sure that we're getting to all of the people that are Rowdies fans in particular. Make sure you're helping us get there. Patreon is the number one way to support if you want to take your listenership to the next level. Starting for as little as a dollar a month, all the way up to like $10 or more a month, you can support us and help us pay the bills for what we have to do to run this show. When you get to the level of $10 or more, you become an executive Patreon producer, and you will get announced on a rotational basis during the year. Again, this week is David Morales. We thank him as always. We also want to say thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier to MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get your custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. And if you are tired of the same old uniforms and the cookie-cutter templates that come out of Nike and Adidas, and you're looking for something unique, completely custom, for your youth club, Sunday league squad, adult, or maybe even a pro team, Icarus FC can help you create the kit of your dreams at an affordable price. Let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com. Matt, it's been fun. It's been another good episode. I think we go 2-for-2 on Eastern Conference Finals against Louisville. How does that sound?
Sounds like I'm drinking some Earn Brew.
Absolutely. All right, everybody. We will see you all this weekend on the Twitch Rowdies pregame show on the Rowdies GG channel. And with that, you guys have a great night, and go Rowdies. The Rowdies run here, the Rowdies run there, they kick the ball around. The Rowdies run here, the Rowdies run there.